Pictures are alive. They're not books. They are the very living essences of nature itself.
What a strange person.
Unbelievably powerful supercomputer that's running our reality, and we don't have a clue as to how to operate it.
So when maybe you or somebody else creates an AGI system, and you get to ask her one question, what would that question be?
What's outside the simulation?
Say in your mind, say to yourself, I am more than my physical body, because I am more than physical matter. I can perceive that which is greater than the physical world.
For some reason, he knows exactly what I'm going through. Like that day, it's a synchronicity. It has to be. I don't talk to him about this stuff, but I can literally deal with something. It's so freaking weird how we gel. I can literally deal with something, have a problem that day, and then Pacho will have a guest magically that is going to talk about the thing that I've been dealing with. I don't know why it works out that way, but it does. If you want to support the show, please do so. We can definitely use it. Go to LightingTheVoid.com, join the Patreons, or send a one-time donation, grab something from the store, or if you can't do it financially, well, then just forget about it. No, I'm just playing. If you can't do it financially, spread the word. Tell everybody to come listen to Lighting the Void. Tomorrow night, we're going to have Charlie Robinson on the program. I've been looking forward to speaking to him. He's also airs his show, Macro Aggressions, on The Fringe FM, which is cool. It's cool to have him aboard. And then Thursday night, we're going to be speaking about the mysteries of the moon with Constance Victoria Briggs. And then we'll do open lines Friday night. So that is that. I don't know I don't really do I used to do these headlines and talk about the news and stuff, but really, there's always something crazy going on in the news every day. The only thing that bothered me in the news today was that Dustin Diamond from Saved by the Bell, you know, the guy that played Screech, passed away. I didn't even know he had lung cancer. And his whole thing was that he wanted, before he died, he wanted to, like, hang out with the bass player from Tool. And I thought it was kind of a sad story, man, because I like Saved by the Bell. If you're my age, then, you know, that show, I've probably seen every episode of that show when I was a kid. So, rest in peace, Dustin Diamond, Sir Screech. I didn't even know he had lung cancer. Anyways, yeah, and today is a pagan holiday that people are celebrating where they're doing pagan stuff because I'm not pagan, right? Like I'm like half pagan or Christian pagan, I guess. I'm a hermetic Kabbalist. That's what I would call myself. And it's funny because it seems like there's so many pagan holidays in bulk. You know, it's also called Bridget's Day. It's a Gaelic tradition, festival marking the beginning of spring. And so it was traditionally held on February the 1st, and it lands about halfway between the winter solstice and the spring equinox. And historically, it was widely observed throughout Ireland, Scotland, and the Isle of Man. And also, I think this is the beginning of, what is it, like Lent is happening too, if you're Catholic. There's so many freaking holidays. So many. It doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter. Whatever. There's my favorite holiday is Halloween. That's the one I remember, Halloween and Christmas and the 4th of July. That's about it. Also, I want to mention, too, that today I was just on two shows back-to-back, and it was really crazy because I wanted to stay longer with Gry America and talk about some more magic stuff, right? Like, I really wanted to, but I didn't get to. And as soon as I got off that show, I jumped on Forbidden Knowledge News with Chris Matthews. So both of those podcasts are out there. We just kind of talked about magic and the elemental world and the astral realm. I got to spend a little bit longer with Chris Matthews on Forbidden Knowledge News. So if y'all want to go check those out, you can. So tonight is a topic that definitely has everything to do with consciousness. But have you ever heard of anybody talk about soul fragmentation? I've heard Mary bring this up a few times to me. And I believe, and I think that our soul does fragment in times of trauma and suffering from the time we're children on as we get older. And we're constantly trying to work that out. What's happened to us in our childhood. Now, if you had a good upbringing, like you had a good mommy and daddy, well, you're not so fragmented as other people. But when we lose like pieces of ourselves, what are we trying to do to take its place, right? What finds its way in our life to take its place? I had a really cool conversation with Bri last night, too, about some of this stuff. And what do we really mean when we talk about the nature of darkness? So all of this stuff, by the way, can be worked out in the astral realm through dream symbolism. But again, I'm going to go back to, if you go into our chat room, if you go to thefringe.fm/chat room, you can click on the hashtag astro stuff. And I know that Mother Goose started this conversation in there and asked, what in the world is going on today, astrologically speaking? I thought these highest highs and lowest lows were just me, but I really do not feel like I'm able to control my emotions lately. Well, you're not the only one, dear. When we have fragments or things that come from our childhood, or a lot of times we try to work these things out through relationships. And I don't think that's necessarily bad if you're with the right people that can see these things. But a lot of times what happens is we end up in toxic friendships, jobs, relationships. And then, oh man, it's really bad when you can't recognize that stuff too. And you're doing things that, like, you know, messing around with magic or messing around even with darker stuff when you can't even recognize your own subconscious or emotional issues. So I talked about this on Gry America. I talked about this on Forbidden Knowledge News, a little bit more on Gry America though, about balancing our elements and magical initiation that has everything to do with balancing our elements. And a long time ago, it was taught in a good way. Like some Freemasonry was good. Some of the stuff that all of Freemasonry, Rosicrucianism, all of the Western ceremonial traditions, they mainly base this on the Tree of Life, right? But they also base it on Hermetic Law too. And it seems like it's a good teaching. It's a good universal teaching. It empowers you, all of that stuff. But if you're not using it to balance yourself out, if you're just using this stuff to manifest things into your life, and you're not using it to work on yourself, then it causes problems because it triggers a lot of things. It really does. And there are people in these secret societies, it doesn't really matter which ones, just like there are people in the church that use this stuff against us for power. It's not like what people think, right? Like KRS-One talked about this. It's not really what people think. I'm not saying there's not super evil in the world, because there is. Edward Snowden definitely showed us that. And there's a new series on Netflix, if you go watch it, called Spycraft. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's a whole series about what intelligence is doing and some of the tools and some of the techniques they've used to get done what they need to do. But we're not just fighting our lives against intelligence agencies or the cabal or whatever. And this is what I want to talk to Mason Fury about, because he's kind of seen, I guess he's had like an indoor look into this. But it's also the corporations and advertising companies and things like that, that, I mean, I'll tell you the truth. When I can open up Google Analytics or Monster Insights or look at the analytics for the app, and I can literally tell, and this is public information, I can tell how many people are clicking where'd they come from, where'd you go, what your age is, what you're most likely to visit, how long you stayed on the website. I mean, it pretty much shows me your whole behavior patterns, right? And that helps me discover what do I need to do to make my business better. But this is public information. What do you think they are studying on us right now? I talked about this the other night. Spotify is about to change their service to where they're going to be like tapping into your emotions and playing music based on your emotions. In other words, reading your emotions. And if this is all about data mining, increasing conversions, and then getting them to do what you want them to do. I just got through watching this video that one of our listeners sent, and I can play some audio of it. It's freaking creepy. I don't know. You guys have probably listened to it, but this was the first time I listened to it today. That was Bill Gates talking about, what was he talking about? He was studying people's brain in Afghanistan, and they were literally talking about releasing a virus to control the religious factors of people. I don't know where this video came from. I don't even know why it hasn't been taken down. And I'm going to try to turn this up and see if you guys can hear this. Maybe we'll get it out on the air here. Hold on. This is Bill Gates talking.
Real-time PCR expression of the VMAT2 gene. Over here, we have individuals.
Now I'm looking at, just so you know, I'm looking at this video, and it says Department of Defense ID 149AZ2. If you guys have seen this, let me know. It says local Pentagon. It says PENT. I'm assuming that's Pentagon. And then it's like, I got a video ID and it says Bill Gates briefing to the CIA. All right. So the people asking questions in the crowd are supposedly the CIA. There's like six guys, and there's Bill Gates pointing at charts about the human brain. Now listen to what he's saying.
Let me complete. So over here we have individuals who are not particularly fundamentalists, not particularly religious, and you can see there's a much reduced expression of this particular gene, the VMAT2 gene. Another evidence that supports our.
So he's talking about genetics. He's calling this the VMAT2 gene, which is the God gene, VMAT2, expression in religion versus non-religious individuals, the God gene. Some of you know about this, right?
Hypothesis for the development of this approach.
By spreading this virus, we're going to eliminate individuals from donning on a bomb vest and going into a market and blowing up the market.
So our hypothesis is that these are fanatical people, that they have overexpression of the VMAT2 gene, and that by vaccinating them against this, we'll eliminate this behavior. So we have some very, very remarkable data in this next slide. Here we have two brain scans. These are fMRIs. These are two different individuals with different levels of expression of VMAT2. on top.
So he's showing a graph of some, if you guys have seen this in chat, let me know. So he's showing a graph of where this gene is, like it's in the right middle front gyrus or the anterior insula. He's showing the heat maps of where this stuff is lit up in people's brain. And you'll specifically hear him talking about releasing a virus, if they hadn't already said it, releasing a virus to control the religious nature or the God gene of people.
Is an individual who's a religious fanatic and individual, and we've repeated this numerous times, that has high levels of VMAT2. Now, this individual down here who had low levels of the VMAT2 gene, this individual would self-describe as not particularly religious. In each case, these individuals were read a religious text. This individual lit up the right middle frontal gyrus.
Also, I want to let you guys know, when did this happen? When did this video actually get released? The date marked on this video is April 13th, 2005.
Shown here. And that's a part.
Now, I'm not sure if this is Bill Gates at all. It looks like him. It sounds like him. But this is a video somebody sent me.
It has to do with intents and beliefs and desires. In marked contrast, here's an individual who would not particularly self-describe as religious. And when they're read a religious text, what you see is that this part of the brain called the anterior insula lights up. This is a part of the brain that's associated with disgust or displeasure on hearing something.
So you're suggesting I take a CT scan with me when I'm evaluating people to determine whether I put a bullet in their head?
So the data that I'm presenting here.
So my point is all of this is just about data mining, right? Data mining to treat you as if you're a lab rat. Now they're talking, they can justify this and say that this is, oh, we're going to release a virus to control the gene in someone's mind so that they don't go bombing people. The point is, man, is like the data mining is the least of what you need to worry about. Of course it's there. Snowden broke that loose. That's not stopping or whatever. But now we live in a world that's controlled by more than what you think, right? Now they're trying to control your emotions. And guys, what I'm trying to tell you is the reason why we want to be void walkers and we want to do this kind of stuff and wake ourselves up consciously and explore consciousness in a practical way is because we don't want our emotions to be controlled any more than they already are. If they start learning how to control our emotions and the chemical and dopamine levels and all of this other stuff, we're in big trouble. And the only way to fight back with that stuff, it's not going to be drugs and it's not going to be war. It's going to be where you're able to actually control your own awareness and consciousness in a practical manner. So if you're not practicing meditation, magic, astral travel, dream journaling, all of the above, waking yourself up, it's time to do it now, right? Yeah. Just Google Bill Gates gene, April 2005. So, but there's a lot of people debunking it, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. He clearly stated talking about trying to get people to trying to do this to people. This is what I'm saying. We've been talking about this for a year. Scientists across the world, Bill Gates isn't the only one. I know people like to make like a martyr this guy, but he's not the only one. There are scientists all across the world and the United States. All they're doing is just, if it's not Neuralink, if it's not the God gene displacement thing, if it's not what's in these vaccines, they are treating you like you are a lab rat. And whether you realize it or not, this vaccine is experimental. It's experimental. Okay? So you're being treated like a lab rat. It's time to wake up. I'm not one of these conspiracy guys that's angry because you won't wake up and you don't think. I'm not like that. What I'm telling you is it's time to learn your own potential and your own power. At least go from that way. Try it. All right. And we're going to talk to Mason Fury. We got to take our first break. I'm Joe. This is Lighting the Void. We're going to get deep into some conspiracy stuff tonight, though. I promise you. well, let's just call it parapolitical. That's a better word for it, right? That's the one that makes everybody feel better, I think. Doesn't it? For joining us. Our guest tonight here is with us, Mason Feary, and this is the first time I've ever talked to this kind of I guess we could say person in this field, which is geospatial intelligence. So Mason Feary is a former geospatial intelligence analyst for the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, or NGA, and U.S. Army, serving for 6 years in the uniformed services and 3 years as a civilian with the NGA. Now, during 2017, after being approached by high-level occultists in the District of Columbia, Mason began to see a new world, one hidden from the majority of the population, one where elites run the world in every facet of society in the darkest of areas. Upon his awakening, he began to expand his awareness by healing the mother and father wounds and many other childhood traumas, being curious about the occult and other forms of hidden or lost information. He dedicated his life to discovering the knowledge hidden from humankind by using his abilities given to him through his past profession of intelligence collection. His goal or mission is to help those create new and powerful imagery in mind to expand past former constraints with the human consciousness. So that is, this is definitely interesting. Thanks for coming on, Mason. It's good to have you, brother.
Thanks for having me.
So you got to explain to our audience what a geospatial engineer is, so people kind of understand this, because I know you worked for intelligence. There's different levels of it. Geospatial, I mean, you can look it up, but just in your terms.
If you look it up, it'll tell you about mapping and 3D analysis. But essentially, you know, all the satellites that we have orbiting above us and stuff like that, each one of those sensors performs a different task in the hands of an analyst, whether I'm trying to extract a feature or if I'm trying to look for, you know, hidden things within structures, look for IED caches or factories. But essentially what a geospatial analyst does in the intel and the Army world is mission planning, a collection of data to appropriately supply troops on the ground with precognition of whatever they're trying to get into before they get into it, to prevent as many casualties and have as much intelligence assets as they can prior to stepping boots on the ground. Gotcha. It was a cool skill. It was a great skill.
So did you work with people like air combat controllers and stuff like that, where, you know,
not necessarily, no. Like if the military or specific agency had a mission, we would go in there, eyes in the sky, kind of basically do it virtually, right, and tell you hazards, tell you what's going on, what's the possible outcomes, what are we facing against, before they actually hit the go button. And then we'd, within our professional skill set, we would brief whoever's in command at that time our recommendations and what they what we hypothesize what could happen as they get there.
So let me look at the cool version of this from my civilian point of view. So all these movies, when you see these guys in these rooms looking at satellites and there's some dude walking around telling everybody what to do, right? Were you the guy sitting at one of those desks, like finding all this stuff for them, you know.
Yeah, but it's definitely not as fast as the movies make it. It's not like, oh, we found him in an hour. No, no, if that was the case, no one would get away with anything.
Like that movie, like Enemy of the State, where they're all tracking the guy down, you know. They make it seem like it all happened so fast.
I can. It depends on how many people you have on a team. There's some amazing things that we can do or have access to. Now everything that's digital, everyone has a surveillance device in their hand or in their pocket.
Yeah, well, basically, like,
makes their job quite easy.
Yeah, definitely, like, telling everybody where we're at and what we're doing 24/7 for sure.
Yeah. And then you recruit people like Instagram and Facebook, and you got free intelligence collection right there.
Yeah. So, did you actually get involved with any of that? Did you see people? I mean, I don't want to get you in trouble or nothing, but did you see people using like social media and that kind of data? Did you ever stumble upon that in your field, having to use those things?
Me personally, no. But I do know that, you know, something exists called metadata, which is data about data. And I have overheard that there's a virtual database that stores what I guess you would call like a virtual consciousness of each individual based off their traffic of what they do online. And it monitors their activity, monitors their likes, their dislikes. And a lot of those apps that we, you know, play the little game, like, oh, what kind of flower is James today? You know, those type of things really dive into your browser history or your activity to give you those analytics. And that's all free data that you kind of give away without reading those disclosure contracts. And, you know, there's a specific reason why Facebook and Instagram and all those people, big tech, why they're in Congress, you know, debating, well, what is the limits of what they can collect. And absolutely, you know, you can, it's now at the point where you have to get a Supreme Court judge to access your Facebook data. Like, that's impressive. Like, you know, Facebook is such a tool that the courts will ask for your message history.
Oh my gosh.
So that shows you right there that it's already being used for something different. And then you gotta remember that this was created in 2008, right when Obama was coming.
Yeah, I know, man. I wish I would have used that in my first like divorce case or whatever. I wish I represented myself, and I did pretty good actually. I studied, but if I could have used my Facebook, I would have won. I would have won hands down, right? But I didn't know you could submit it. So, anyways, so that's interesting, man. You got an interesting job.
I had, not anymore.
Not anymore, right? But no. That's still pretty interesting. So tell me about, in your story, you mentioned that high-level occultist approach to you. What do you mean by that?
Well, so, I mean, let me get this first. Not the majority of them don't necessarily have an evil stigma, you know, against them or associated with them. A lot of these people that are in the Brotherhood of Masonry, they do it for the Brotherhood. They do it for the secret knowledge. They do it for networking, all this kind of stuff. Right. But there are certain people, especially affiliated in the higher ranks of intelligence agencies, where it's more power and money that they're after. And they'll kind of recruit certain people that they see as like a young rising star or someone that has good influence. Because in their domain, you know, there's something called mental magnetism, and what mental magnetism is what people like Hitler had, right? He has charisma, which, if you know about esoteric or spiritual understanding, charisma is a supernatural ability to influence people. And then, you know, people like Obama and Bill Clinton, they have that same type of charismatic character to them. So those are the type of people that these guys want to recruit, because that's the face of their operation.
Is that why they recruited me? Because I'm charismatic?
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, possibly, yeah.
But here's the thing. I'm from the South, so a Freemasonry in the South, we don't recruit people, really. They just come to us, and then you vote on them. That's it.
Yeah. It's the same. You know, you have your vetting process, and I think everyone has to unanimously vote for it.
Cool. So I'm on the dark side. So we need to work together, right? Because I'm already on the inside.
Are you in the Blue Lodge?
Yeah. Well, we're all a Blue Lodge Masons, actually, but you have to be a Blue Lodge Mason in order to do anything. So.
So these guys, they're a little bit different. You know, when they're sitting there and they're asking, you know, are you curious about your, our organization and stuff like that, and they ask you for lunch. I wasn't intimidated at that point, but when they started promising money and power, that's when my bells kind of went off the scales a little bit, and they started talking about some other things that they're into. But we're not talking about Orthodox Freemasons, the ones that go off the curve and they do things like what Rosicrucians do, or what some of these other dark occult type people do, which is a little bit different than the original Freemasons, because I've met plenty of Freemasons that are normal, but these guys are definitely not normal.
Yeah.
In the sense of why is a person within a fraternity able to promise position, authority, and money within an intelligence agency? That's, you know, technically when you're in that type of position, it's called a gang, and a gang with motives. And then these brothers can't testify against each other in court, and there's all this kind of secrecy. So it's just, there's a lot of room for things to go under the rug with that type of principle and understanding.
Yeah. So I don't know how much you know about me, but I am an occultist, and I've been, I'm a Mason and a practice Rosicrucianism. So this is kind of weird, right? So I've never been approached or told that I was going to have a lot of power. I'm not saying that you haven't, because I've never went outside the realms of where I went. But no one's ever promised me power or told me that I was going to be in some kind of, or get some type of special anything, really.
Well, they said everything that they promised me, make sure I get it in writing. And when I heard that, that's when I kind of backed off, and I wasn't interested in anything else they had to say.
Yeah, so they might be doing something different in D.C., right? Did this happen in D.C.?
Oh, yeah. Oh, this was, yeah, dead heart in D.C., yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm really interested now, so tell me, what's going on?
That's about as far as it got. My internal guidance system did not like it. I had been approached by a couple members when I was in the Army back here in my home state, and
yeah,
that was way earlier than the D.C. time, but I still just had an off feeling about it. They weren't nearly energetically as different as the ones in D.C., but basically what I could say is there's some sort of like unraveling, you know, that gives you goosebumps, that you know when something's off, right? There's some sort of a higher awareness that you can kind of judge or sense from another person. And these type of people were definitely the ones I did not want to be associated with.
Well, and you know, nowadays you don't know who you're getting involved with either, because there's so many, there's so many offshoots of Freemasonry.
Yes, and I would say that they're not normal Freemasons. Like, I think that's their front into something a little bit different. Now, what is that they were different about? I didn't have the time to pursue.
They have a Masonic, like what you're talking about. They have a Masonic society in Europe, and they literally call themselves vampires. They're not associated with the Grand Lodge of England or France in any way, but they've created their own
thing. Yeah, I discovered a lot of that type of stuff.
Yeah.
They'll make their offshoots and then create stuff like Skull and Bones, or they'll create things like some of those other occultic type societies, like the Boulay Society, you know, all those different type of, I guess, one leader goes around and wants to create something else.
Yeah.
Aleister Crowley being a good example of one of them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And the funny thing about Crowley, too, is he tried to be so all he ever wanted to be was a Freemason. And he worked his way around all of the brothers kept denying him until he went to a different country that didn't know really his reputation like everybody else did, and let him in, right? So he could get Thelema into the realms of Freemasonry and spread his religion and all this other stuff. But anyways, I wouldn't doubt it though, man. Like, I wouldn't doubt that you're approached by anybody that's trying to do that. Like, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Mark Passio, but he was an actual Satanist. Are you familiar with him?
No, I'm not.
You should like get familiar with him. So he really talks about, some of the stuff that you're talking about too, how, these people were they were only about power. They were only about humanist, like the only the strong will survive type people, right? And to hell with everybody else, pretty much. And they took all of the teachings, like from Freemasonry and all of the good things about them, and twisted them. So that's the thing about esotericism, is it's mystery stuff that you learn, but you can easily use it for the wrong reasons too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. It sucks, actually, when people do that. So tell me a little bit more, man. So you started studying the occult and looked into this information, and this led you to...
Well, to backtrack a little bit, I got approached by those people. And then I started just kind of questioning, because I started being aware of things within my own consciousness, I think, that didn't necessarily... I was aware of before. And I would say that it was more like a higher guidance system. Like my conscience was really speaking to me during that moment.
I got you.
And, and that's actually the start of my awakening, is when these people approached me. Plus, you know, I was quite fragmented with my own traumas at that time, and the stuff I was going through and all the stuff throughout my life. But then, you know, I started looking into some of these conspiracy theories, because, you know, I started looking into Masons and like, what are these guys about?
Yeah.
I started looking into like 9/11, for example, was a big one. And a lot of people, you know, at the time didn't know that Osama bin Laden was actually a trained CIA asset on payroll.
Oh, yeah.
And so I started going, oh, my gosh, well, what's this? And started looking into it more, you know, using some platforms to kind of look into these things and find some discoveries that the mainstream narrative on a lot of these conspiracies are absolutely false. And the reason why we have all these like Benghazis and all those other type of events is because that's the deep state trying to cover up their tracks, and they're using their internal network with all their friends, trying to basically silence the show. As a result, if we fast forward from 2 years till then, we have what we're at now, where they're just on the back pedal. But during my investigations, you know, I started stumbling upon people like Walker Atkinson. I started stumbling upon the arcane teachings, ancient Hermeticism, the seven universal laws, the Kabbalion, you know, all these different type of universal truths, or I guess you could call them like spiritual laws.
Right.
And they started clicking. I started reading these things, and literally I'd read like the law of polarity, and my consciousness at the time was manifesting these lessons in the physical form.
Yeah,
and I was able to integrate the teaching from a book, but through my waking reality. And so I kept following it. I kept, you know, getting stumbled upon a different source of material that would teach me a higher aspect of knowledge through literal my own consciousness.
Yeah.
Or interactions with other people in the same field. And I started just accelerating my own spiritual awakening, started getting into crystals, started getting into harmonics.
Awesome.
Frequency tuning, all this kind of, you know, voodoo, hoodoo, woodoo stuff. But I figured out that, holy crap, it actually works. One of my favorites is when you're doing a regressive therapy on yourself or something like a deep meditation specifically targeted towards trauma. You want to listen to frequencies that gets you into a theta state.
Really?
The reason why a theta state is so important is because when we're children, from the age of about 1 to 7, your brain is constantly in theta. And what theta does is that's the learning frequency. So who we are from age 1 to 7 is who we will be for the rest of our lives. And we don't really realize that. So when you're trying to reprogram your mind, you go back into that learning brainwave frequency, which is just one of the 5 dimensions consciously achievable, right? You have the alpha, data, theta,
right,
delta, gamma.
Right.
Those are all dimensional frequencies that we're aware of, but there's others that exist. They just don't list it in science. But the theta frequency is so important because that kind of gets us in between the spot of soul and me, right? And so that's when you're able to do that objective thinking and extract the data, as you want to call it, from the experience.
Okay.
And integrate all that.
So relatively then, what we're saying is you had this, career. You met these occultists, which, whatever, right? Doesn't matter, good, bad. The point is these people triggered something inside of you.
Oh, that made you go. I'm pretty sure I was one of them in a past life, and I was recalling those memories
and
just
so,
by being around their field.
and made you go seek more knowledge. And
oh, yes.
This knowledge led you to the ancient laws of Hermetics and the ancient Kabbalah and all these things, which now you found out that it's like it resonates with you. And mm-hmm. what I'm seeing from you is, since you're an analyst and you're such an intelligent guy, you're really trying to nail this down, right, in a scientific way. And I think that's awesome. So just I'm recapping for everybody here, right? Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm doing. So like, so you're at Theta, and this is cool. I'm writing this stuff down because I listen to stuff all the time before I go to sleep, right? Mm-hmm. And we've got people in our audience that's actually dealing with trauma, especially emotional trauma right now. So what you're talking about, I think, is really going to help. So you can go ahead and continue. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Yeah, no problem. Absolutely. The problem with both religion and science is they think of themselves as separate. And in order to find a scientific spiritual truth, you have to do one with the other. You can't do them opposite. And what I mean by that is, if you take, like, say, the law of rhythm, and you can justify it in a scientific term, but then you can kind of understand it with just flowing with your life or kind of following synchronicity. Mm-hmm. So it may sound scientific because I'm not only a Virgo, but I'm also an analyst, like you said. But the true understanding is in the subconscious realms. It's the realms that speak to you in imagery. It's the realms that speak to you in memories, emotions, colors, all those inspirations, not actual like conscious data, logic, you know, A plus B, that type of stuff won't really get you there. It can get you an understanding, but you'll get lost with all, you know, trying to find a path to how to get all this stuff. But so when it comes to like healing, and what I had to do was I created so many different facets to myself because of my story, because of my experiences, that I became someone who I was not. And I think a lot of people can
relate to that.
Some of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when we create all these different things, and when trauma happens to us, well, we kind of box ourselves into this category of, oh, I had to become this person to escape that event. And what happens is we left that aspect of ourselves in that corner of the room, and then we continued our life. So that creates something called a soul fragment.
Yeah,
and it can be with anything. It can be with traumatic experiences. It can be anything with losing a love life, job situation, divorce. Some of it can be genetic from your ancestral type of traits.
Abuse, abuse trauma too.
Absolutely, yeah, abuse trauma. And there's ones that are more polarized with energetic value, or what I would call density, and those are the ones that are related to sex. Because if we know true mastery of like Taoism, right? It's sexual energy. That's the most pure energy there is. And so one of the reasons why there's so much sexual crimes in this planet is because that's the most powerful form of manifestation, whether it's in a negative polarity or a positive.
I've been telling everybody this stuff forever, bro. Like, I've been telling everybody this stuff forever. And it's where all of the damage stuff is. And, you know, like, even when you talk about it, the people that have the most damage in those realms, you can cringe a little. You can feel them cringe, because I think we all have some fractures there. In some form or fashion, we all have fractures in these places, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And look what they're doing right now at the gate. Like, if we talk about the current geopolitical sense, we have, and I'm not categorizing anyone, if this is your belief, then that's okay. But trying to force changing a young child's gender before they even know or appropriately mature to know what they should be, I think that's cruel. Because if you look at statistics of people that do the transition, within a couple of years or so, they regret that decision. And why are you giving a child the ability to kind of decide their fate at such a young age? And well, the reason why is because they're trying to lead towards pedophilia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look, that sounds incredibly harsh, crazy, and evil. But the truth is there are incredibly harsh, crazy, and evil people on the earth. Whether people want to realize it or not, they're there for sure. Yeah. So,
and you know, with myself, I experienced sexual trauma as a child, and a lot of abuse, and then I kind of just built this ego of who I thought I was to be protected, and I idolized the Hulk. Did I say it again?
To protect yourself, yeah.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You developed that character, but the more I went along with that character, the more I had to kind of tune it and change it up a little bit and become a different person to get through a different situation. Because it's kind of like, you know, the white lie. If you start off with a white lie, eventually you have to start adding to it.
Right.
And when you start adding to it, you get so much farther off the original story that where are you? You have no idea. And that's where I think some of these people get to the point, what's called the dark night of the soul. It's a point of where your ego goes, you know, hold on, let's take a step back. And it's one last ditch effort to try to collect all its pieces. And then you go through this purging process of trying to integrate and figure out what is it that I'm feeling.
Dude, listen, I want you to finish this. This is like heavy stuff, man. This is awesome. All right. So we got to take a break, and I never apologize for my breaks, but I'm apologizing right now because because while you're opening up and talking about being vulnerable, it's the last moment time I want to take a break, but we got to do it, bro. We're going to come back and we're going to finish this story. You guys, I'm Joe Roop. This is Lighting the Void. Stay with us. More coming up. To Lighting the Void. I still got those commercials that say the show's from the Kingdom of Arkansas, but we're not in Arkansas right now. Maybe we will be one day again. But Mason Fury is here with us, our guest, and telling a fascinating story about his profession as a man, you're going to have to say that word again. A geospatial analyst, is that what it is, right?
Yes. And geospatial engineer.
And how he ran into some Freemasons and occultists, and this was, and this was something that caused you to like seek more knowledge, which led you down a deeper road. You know what's funny too is I've done so many shows, and because I have a background in like Freemasonry, all this stuff, I've done so many shows, and people start talking about Freemasonry and all this stuff like it's a bad thing, but I never, because I know that there's all these offshoots and stuff, like I never get offended by it or anything, because I feel like, honestly, Mason, I feel like your soul is going to lead you to where it needs to go every single time, you know?
Yeah.
And so at first I get this little trigger in me that's like, oh, defend yourself, right? It's the ego, you know, but I never do it, because I don't even think I would have a show if I did that, you know, like I don't think I would, you know? And now you're telling us this story, like, where you started studying Hermetics and Kabbalah, and then you started studying the ancient truths of things, and it started resonating with you. And we were talking about theta states, and you started discovering that our soul, you talked about how it fractures when these things happen to us. And then we leave part of our soul there. We don't ever heal it. We just kind of leave it there. And then you said that you experienced some trauma yourself, and then I had to take a break. It was like the worst time to take a break, man. I'm sorry. So
no problem.
Go ahead and pick up where you left off.
Yeah. Well, to recap with the Freemasons, that's kind of been a theme my whole life. I've always kind of wanted to join them and see what they're about.
Sure.
And each person does have their path, and they have a wealth of knowledge, and even published books that common folk can't read. Uh-huh. But it just comes to the point where those offshoots, right? It's a blanket statement, say Freemasons.
Sure.
But the true motive is that the person and their following. So that's what I have to say about that. There's a lot of organizations out there that are like Gentlemen Club that do a lot of great things. It's just those specific people that you can just tie to the deep state. Not saying all as a whole is evil. It's just the black sheep within those.
Yeah, right. It's, I understand. I still think that is like, that itself is just a doorway, man. It's the most, because now we're getting to the important stuff, right? Where you realize this thing, probably not just about yourself, but how it's happening to all of us, right? And so what did you discover at that point when it came to the soul fracture and discovering it in yourself and others? Like, where do we go from there?
Well, from there, I went to a metaphysical shop in DC, and I stumbled upon a book called Shamanism and How to Heal the Soul. I didn't actually read the whole thing, but I just so happened to kind of open a book and flip through the parts where I actually need, and it talked about soul retrieval. And I was like, oh, that's kind of funny, you know, not necessarily being one that believed in a soul at that time, but it had talked about how we leave energetic markers in certain places in time within our own story. And if we leave them there, they become detached from ourselves. And then the more we do these type of situations, or the more we encounter these energetic imbalances, the more we start tearing different parts of ourselves, and the same lesson actually manifests duality speaking, like in a worse way. Yeah. Meaning, you know, say you have, I don't know, loyalty issues, and you're constantly attracting a partner that brings out that distrust within you. Well, if you keep going down that path and keep fragmenting yourself, the lesson's going to keep coming back at you. And until a point where there's nothing for you to give out anymore is when you hit that, you know, dark soul, dark night of the soul.
Interesting.
And what I think that is that's, I think that's like the SOS of the soul saying, hey, we have some work to do. And that's when we steep into a deep depression and we start, you know, really looking at our lives and assessing, well, what is it that brings me joy? And then people are more apt to that spiritual searching. And I think that's just becoming more popular now because more people are doing it. So that collective threshold, or the 100 monkey effect, so to speak, has reached its point in time where these questions that we have, other people are asking at the same time. And the basis of, you know, what a soul retrieval is if we experience trauma, we actually left a part of ourselves in that time when that trauma occurred. And, you know, a lot of people will talk about events in their life that something horrific has happened, but they don't remember it, or they felt like that there was a piece of them not sitting in the actual vehicle or the body at the time. And then when they try to go back on that, they go, oh, I don't remember. Well, you can take that as a clue, is like, yeah, that's a soul fragmentation. That is a part of you that was taken away because you just couldn't handle it emotionally. And a good way to kind of claim those pieces back is to feel into the emotions. And so, you know,
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Like, you're validating. The synchronicities of this episode right now that we're doing is insane. I'm just saying. This is going to be one of Lighting the Void's most synchronistic episodes right now. So go ahead That's with the awesome. Emotions thing. Sorry, brother.
Yeah. So when I lost my job, I actually spoke out against these members, and I had a big mouth and a huge ego at the time. And I got myself removed from my intelligence career. I became homeless and all this kind of stuff. So I was, you know, down in that downward spiral of going, well, what the hell am I? During that time, I moved back home and I was unemployed for a while. And, you know, when we experience that enough fragmentation, we have a really busy mind. We're full of anxiety. Some of us go towards drugs and alcohol to continue that escapism because we don't want to feel what it feels like to be in our own body. And for me, alcohol was a big one. And so, you know, one day I had drank a whole bunch and I fell over and I busted the side of my jaw and I was bleeding all over the place. And my friends and my family couldn't find me for like 5 hours. And at that moment I realized, like, oh shit, I got to do something else. Cause, you know, here I have the people that I look up to the most, my best friend and my parents, like, terrified. They couldn't find me. And I found myself, once I came to, I was in a bush covered in blood. And I was like, holy shit, this is crazy.
But how long did this cycle? Did you do this a lot, or was this?
No, this was the first time, but it's just first got time. That bad.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. It just kept declining. Cause I wasn't addressing any of my issues. I was just trying to cover them up. And so, you know, as it was going and continuing, and I was kind of already into this topic, so I started learning about something called quantum walking. You ever heard of that?
I've heard of it, but you're going to have to refresh me because I don't remember exactly what it was.
So quantum walking is something that if you get like an urge to go journey or like, oh, I want to go take a drive, or I just want to leave this current place and go somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. My suggestion is to go on a walk in nature.
Absolutely.
And the reason why, if you go on a walk in nature, you actually are opening a portal within your consciousness to reassess some emotional things that have happened either that day, the past week, the past year, because while you're walking, you don't have any distractions. And at that point, when you open up to what the universe has to offer, nature itself is the healer, because it will show you not only through walking, trying to get a release and then grounding yourself, but you have a clear space in your mind because there's nothing, there's no phones, no one matters. You know, they're trying to get a hold of you. You're just in this space that is that just is
a right? Walk.
It's just life. So.
Dude, you're so a walk. Even if you, and I'll say this, even if you don't have any nature around you, if you just go for, if you just go right and walk, it does, man. It forces you to get in the moment and become aware of everything.
Mm-hmm. Presence is so important, and it won't happen like automatically. For me, it took 2 years of doing this. It came to a point where I'd be walking 13 miles a day, just trying to one, get out of my own mind, and two, find peace in the middle of nowhere. Because I felt like the farther I was away from people and all the noise of the city life, the more I actually found myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when I was walking, you know, the first couple things that would come through my mind or in anyone's mind really is the first initial thoughts that pop up that we usually kind of suppress and push away, those are the ones that want the healing the most.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that soul fragment is ready to be integrated. And when you kind of sit in there and feel into these emotions, right, if you can get past misconceptions or false conceptions of what actually happened and get to the root of the emotion, and once you fully integrate that, you'll actually start to expand not only your auric field, but all the facets of yourself and find deeper truths to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, I'm trying to develop a program on how to do that. And it's not as hard as what people think, but the biggest thing is to actually face your darkness and feel into the situation.
The scariest thing ever. That's what you need to, man. Yeah. Right. So that is not easy for a lot of people. Right. But it is definitely the thing that binds you from your healing and your happiness. And I swear on everything holy that fear is what keeps you from being unhappy. But people look at fear like it's a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. It's an indicator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people actually will say, oh, fear or fearful thoughts, paranoia or anything dark is actually demonic. And I'm here to tell you that no, it's not. A lot of the paranoia and the fear that we have within ourselves is because of something that happened in our past that didn't go our way. So we built this this thought cloud, or if you want to call it a different way, you created an entity surrounding those emotions that you're suppressing a memory within yourself. And I always thought for the longest time, like, oh, I was a targeted individual and all that kind of stuff. Well, that may be because I was investigating like high-level conspiracies with my former connections. But a lot of it was because I was putting so much emphasis on, you know, these occult people doing this, there's spiritual, there's aliens, oh my God, you know, at the brink of awakening, and my consciousness was fractured, where I didn't know what was real. But going back to nature and seeing how nature kind of flows rhythmically, you know, and then stumbling upon these ancient truths and literally witnessing almost like these mathematical patterns of how the universe really works.
You started saying that there is a reality, right? There is a law that's happening. Yeah. Cycles. Yeah. Cool, man. That's real cool.
Yeah. And it's very profound when you can consciously make interaction with a reality that's unseen. And then the more I went into it, I just kept diving deeper, deeper, deeper. I literally got to a memory that I never thought I would remember ever again. And that was being born.
Damn, that's cool.
Everyone's first trauma, if you've had a natural birth at a doctor's office, when the umbilical cord is severed, that is your first trauma. Because all of the creatures in the this planet, when their umbilical cord, they're usually attached to the mother still. Yeah. Whereas ours is actually severed, and where it's severed is our solar plexus, which is our will center or our drive.
And our sun
and
power.
It's also and it's also our first feminine wound, being disconnected from the mother. And so, you know, it just started a roller coaster of events. Once you can get to that memory, you're able to see something what I call the blueprint. And once you're able to find your blueprint, that's kind of like your, I would say, overall theme that you agreed to come down and make fruition within this manifestation that we call life. And you'll see along the way that there's these little blips in the road that we can call traumas, or where our energy gets fragmented, to actually here for us to learn, because in previous incarnations, whether you believe in past incarnations or not, those are things we excelled in our previous lifetimes. Mm-hmm. So we were the most qualified, energetically, spiritually experienced to experience those traumas or hardships in this lifetime. And the purpose for that, people are like, well, why does it always happen to me? It happens to you because if you get through it, you can actually upload that knowledge to what we call the collective and help other people get through the same thing.
Dude, man, what, so, okay. So this is a whole, I really believe what you're saying right now is absolutely freaking 100% true. Right. And this is based on my studies of astrology too, because they have the south node and north node thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the earthly and Capricornish struggles that I have in this life right now are because I mastered them before. I mastered mm-hmm. that. I know it. I've even had dreams about it. I've been on top of the world. I've been successful. I've taken care of all the physical stuff and been meticulous and all that. But now I'm headed towards a different path, right? It doesn't mean I can't do those things. But it was something that you've already mastered isn't going to grow your soul, though.
No,
it's not going to grow your soul, right? So now I'm just to be vulnerable in front of you. I'm fixing I have feminine, what you call, I would say, feminine energetic fractures in my life, big ones, you know.
Coming from feminine wounds. That's an interesting one when you have the healing the feminine or divine mother aspect and the divine father aspect. A lot of the feminine nature wounds, that actually ties around intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
Being vulnerable, being able to express your emotions. And in today's society as a man, that's deemed as gay or unmanly. Yeah. When the most manliest thing you can do is stand in your power to express your emotions in a calm, grounded space.
That's exactly right. Yeah, man. Yeah, because if you flip off the handle, it doesn't matter how much rage you have in you. If you fly off the handle and you flip out, then you're not really, and I'm not saying I haven't done it. I'll still do it to this day, dude. But I'll catch myself halfway and go, what the hell am I doing? Right. Mm-hmm. And then be like, I got to go for a walk. Right. So, but when you do that, you're not tapping into the divine masculine. You're tapping into the child like wound. You're a child throwing a fit again. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you have to realize that's what's happening. I'm a child throwing a fit right now.
Another thing, you ever got into Dolores Cannon stuff?
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Yeah. I take a lot of that and I take them all as experience and a knowledge collection. That doesn't mean I necessarily believe it's true, but I do believe what she said is we're here to master manipulation of energy. And if we look at the current template of what the energetic signatures on this planet are, it's a lot of rage, aggression, and sexual suppression.
Right.
So for us as men in this current place, one of our biggest struggles is how to express emotions, because they cut off our feminine understanding of emotions. And so when we do experience those, they come out in rage, which is a lower form, if you want to talk about it within degrees, you know.
Yeah.
What is the opposite of anger? It's
calmness,
grounded state.
Grounded, right?
That's where the true masculine is supposed to be, in a grounded state. The same thing as the opposite of love is fear. So when we understand that everything is dualistic, you know, in our minds, the genders, everything has its opposite. So if we are totally polarized to one emotion, try to find the center balance, because you can't completely swing the pendulum all the way to the other.
Right.
You find the center, and once you find the center, you'll see the truth of the whole. And that's what the Tao call about becoming in the neutral space, because that is the God creation. It's in the neutral. Mm. So if we ever find ourselves and we're being, outbursting, whatever emotion that's coming through, that's the emotion that you need to find its opposite and then come to common grounds to assess and try to navigate where healing can start.
Well, and secondly, too, as a man, you need to understand, I think all men need to understand, you're not a child anymore. You're a grown man, right? So when your emotions flip out, you don't really realize the power that you have as a man. You can hurt things. You can destroy things. You can cause real damage, not just to others, but mainly to yourself too. You know, I literally seen that happen. Like with my mother, when I was a little kid, I would see her and my stepfather just flip out on each other. And I have like flash memories of them just beating the hell out of each other. Right. And when you're a child and you're seeing grown people act like children, it destroys you, man. Like I'm still trying to heal that stuff to this day and I'm almost 40. Right. So think about that if you're raising kids. You know, like,
yeah, children are a lot smarter than we give credit for.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Children, for sure. Children remember everything. Like you tell a child, hey, we're going to go to the store. Well, they'll tell you that day, like, we're ready to go. And they're like, oh, no, tomorrow. And they're like, oh, it's always tomorrow.
You know? Yeah, right. I know it ain't going to happen. Yeah, for sure.
And then again, with, you know, what I said earlier, from the age of 1 to 7, everything that your parents teach you is who your template of being an adult is going to be. So a lot of these adults that do that outburst of rage, that is literally because they stopped growing at 7. They had enough. They had so much fragmentation that their approach in human relationships are modeled off their only source of information at the time, which is their surroundings of their family.
And from the time they were 1 to 7 or 1 to 12 or whatever, like this is, I tried to explain this to, I'm not going to say any names, but a buddy of mine, you know, and it's like, why does the woman do this and that? I'm like, well, just go meet her father.
Mm-hmm.
Go meet her father. Yep. And then that will tell you what she thinks masculine energy is. And sometimes she won't know why she's attracted to that. Same thing. But before you start pointing your finger at her, same thing with you. Why you keep going attracted after the same women? Go meet somebody's mother and see what's going on there. And so the psychologists weren't wrong. I just think that Carl Jung actually was tapped into this better, because it wasn't just a scientific thing to him. It was a spiritual, deep subconscious thing to him that he wanted to fix so we could heal this. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I want to. So how do we get to where we can heal this instead of staying in the same patterns? Right.
So, you ever heard the phrase that the wise man speaks less? Or
yes.
Something similar to that.
It's bad for a talk show host, but yeah.
Right, right. Well, this is different because we're trying to explain. So when we get triggered or when we want to have an outburst, a good book for this is called The Celestine Prophecy. It teaches about energy dynamics and conversations. And people that are kind of into these type of modalities, it's a little bit different because we interact with it a little bit more. But if I'm, say, in an argument with you, and I am verbally attacking you, which is using my throat chakra, projecting vibrations of a negative form towards you, you have one or two options. You can reflect it as you are my mirror, as every other person in our experience is our mirror. You can either reflect it or transmute it.
Yeah.
And the power, the true power, is taking a negative attack.
It's a and verbal transmuting attack. It, yeah.
And transmuting it, which is called alchemy or mental alchemy.
But it pisses people off. They think you're they're like, you're being passive aggressive. No, I just don't want to fight.
Not about being passive. Yeah, it's how you respond, though.
Right.
So if someone's projecting, like they're saying, F you, right? You could take a pause. And I am fully understanding that I dictate my emotions and I create my energy for the day.
Sure.
What is going on with you has nothing to do with me. So your frustration at me really has to do with frustration at your own position. So with that higher awareness, I can then transmute that understanding in a mere second and then be like, look, man, I'm sorry you're having a rough day.
Yes.
But it's not me.
Yeah.
And I try to tell my coworkers.
I just said that. Look, I'm not trying to virtue signal or nothing, but I just said that to the girl at the gas station who was yelling at me about nothing. Right. You're probably having a bad day. I even said, darling, I'm sorry, you know, but it ain't me. You know what I said to her? I said, it ain't me. You know that song? It ain't me, right? And then she could tell, like, she about started crying, and I was like, oh, I got to go, though, but I'm sorry, you know? I'm sorry, so.
Yeah, the law of exchange, right? So when we're in arguments, we're siphoning energy off each other. And the moment that you cut that flow or rhythmic energetic exchange is the moment they take a step back and they go, like, what? You know, they're kind of be dumbfounded because they're expecting you to retaliate. That's a starting point now, but that's more kind of like down the road once you start healing your own energetic imbalances or triggers or, you know, retrieving those soul aspects is where peace and calmness really comes into play because you kind of have a different understanding of how this whole game works. And I call it a game because once you get to a certain level of awareness,
you can say maturity. It's okay.
Maturity. Yeah, you start manifesting the things you want in life.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I get what you're saying. You paused. You didn't want to say maturity because you don't want to offend anybody, but it's cool.
Yeah. It's not, you know, when I said that I resonate with the Hulk, man, I was not lying. I was egotistical as a bodybuilder, you know, I did all this kind of stuff.
I did that stuff too, but I want to get back. I'm going to do that again, but I want to do it in a more spiritual way.
I'm doing that right now. You ever heard of Shilajit?
Yeah, actually.
That's a miracle mineral. That is absolutely
my
amazing.
I was talking to my dad about that. So we're turning this radio show into man talk now. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But yeah. All right. So we're going to look, I got to take a quick break here and then we'll come back and then we'll take some questions too, because I know there's more to your story, right? We're leaving out a bunch. That probably means I'm talking too much. So, all right. we'll be right back. More Lighting the Void coming up. Quick break, y'all. Stay with us. Back to Lighting the Void. Mason Fury, our guest tonight. I can't be more of a synchronistic show. It feels like everything that I've talked about personally in my personal life, the past, even the shows that I was just on talking to people, even the conversations that I've had with other people, last night with Bri, all of it's coming to a head here in this show with Mason Fury. It's funny. And I swear on everything that Pacho probably booked the show, what, a week ago? When did he talk to you?
Oh, man, about a month ago.
A month ago. See, how does that work perfectly? I swear on the show it works out perfectly every time like that. It's weird.
It just means you're in alignment.
Yeah, it means I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, right? And like,
absolutely.
How, that's another thing too. I think we get fractured. I think we get fractured when we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing. I think it causes fractures inside of us, or it puts us in situations where we get fractured, or I could be wrong though.
You're absolutely right, that's where depression comes from.
Yeah,
you know, the consciousness or the avatar that we are gets tired of playing the same story, and so the farther we get off on our path, like for my example, the farther I got off of my path, I had no idea who I was. And I came around my family after doing all the years of what I was doing off and La La Land or the Matrix, I came back and they said, who are you?
That's
what depression really is when you start asking your questions like, well, who am I? You know, we're plagued with constant feelings of anxiety or fear, or like there's missing a part of yourself, or we're missing like purpose in life, lack of sleep. You know, all those things are basically physical signs that not only are you feeling lost, but we're out of alignment. And what alignment feels like is flow through synchronicity, right? You just go to the gas station, all of a sudden the topic you're talking about tonight is literally manifested in front of you.
Right.
Or through other people in interactions. That is the universe's way of communicating to you consciously in the third dimension that you're going down the path of your highest alignment. And if they're not in your highest alignment, but you're close, you'll notice that there'll be little bumps in the road. Like, you know, someone that's trying to get their, I don't know, this is a really silly example, but someone's trying to get their driver's license. They put all their ducks in a row, but, oh, didn't pass that test.
Something comes up every time.
Something
right?
comes up. Yeah. To get you back on that path.
So let me ask you this question. What's your opinion? If, because I always call this cycles, right? So like, I feel like I'm in alignment, right? But maybe I know somebody that's struggling with the alignment thing. And they, there's these conflicts of energies that are inside of us, I think, too. Like, for instance, I know that I need more grounding in my life, right? And I need to, do that. But the conflict inside of me is like, I'm a person that I don't like the mundane things. And what I mean by mundane is, you know, like making sure the bills are paid exactly on time at 5:30. Making sure like all of the stuff that really at the end of the day, because I've experienced it, doesn't really matter. Right.
No, especially in times like this where, you know, COVID has all these bill restrictions. But if you're talking about grounding, we have three aspects we can heal. You have the body, the mind, and the soul. So for grounding for the body could be your foods and foods coming from literal root plants, like grounding vegetables. For the mind, grounding activities would be meditating, walking barefoot. Spiritual grounding would be trying to find the essence of joy that gives you peace and serenity. So there's three different modalities that you could try to achieve that. When it comes to bills, you know, if you look into the law of manifestation, if we're in a state of lack or state of like, not trusting within our own ability to get these things done,
right,
the universe is going to manifest what you're emotionally putting out there. Like, oh, I need to pay this bill. I'm stressed out. Well, you're going to get stressed out because that's what you're focusing on. You're channeling.
I got triggered today, dude, by a stupid little $60 bill, right? So I'm trying to do all this stuff, right? You know, I mean, like things that don't even really matter. And as soon as I saw that, It was a little bump that you talk about, right? Like, oh, I don't pay this bill, it shuts off the website, right? So you know what I'm saying, right? And it's silly. It's $60, but the damn thing triggered me. I mean, I felt my chest kind of start rising, and I was like, oh, there's something here, right? There's something here that's pissing me off. So I just started saying stuff because I feel like, well, if I start saying stuff, I'll figure out what it is. But what I don't realize is when I start saying all this stuff, I'm affecting what's going on around me too. You know, at that point, yeah, I should have just got up and walked.
There's two sides of that though. Is like, this is your livelihood. This is your message. So of course that would be, a triggering.
Yeah.
But then also looking into the fact that money is definitely energy.
Right.
And if we're in a feeling of scarcity or lack, we're going to manifest less of what we're focusing on the most.
Mm-hmm.
Now your podcast and your livelihood, that's very important. And I think when it comes to that, I was unemployed for 2 years and I couldn't pay for anything. I actually had to file for bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because I was so focused on trying to find a job
or money.
What I was actually supposed to be doing is finding myself. I was too focused on the material gain to give me status because I had nothing, no car, no job, lived with mom and dad. But the truth in all of that was I was supposed to find what it is within me, and then whatever I found as my passion could then create itself and make a form of living. And I really think it's just, you know, like you said earlier, you know, fame, money, and power, like that's all good and well. And I was making quite a bit of money when I was working, what I was doing. But I'll tell you, the level of peace that I have now, making not even a third of what I used to make.
Yeah, right.
I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Yeah, like I mean, I don't want to go back to that place where I'm, you know, forcing myself to make $3,000, $4,000 a week to make sure that everybody has whatever they want. You know, you're like, wow. But that's what I did. That's what I did back in the day. You know, like I had three or four crews of people that I did. And I mean, I'd play golf. I had a bike, a motorcycle. I could take vacation whenever I wanted. You know, granted, the guys that worked for me weren't very bright, but that's okay. You know, like I just had to keep retraining them every day, you know, but like, I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing, man. Like it didn't matter how much stuff I had. It didn't matter. Like I felt empty, you know. Mm-hmm. I was like half depressed. I was like a zombie kind of, you know. And the only times I had like really a lot of fun, I would have to drink to get there, you know.
Yeah. Because we're not doing anything that's satisfying the soul. And this reality is kind of very much based on financial stability and sure, material possession. You know, marketing, a lot of people think it's like, oh, it's a cool logo and all that. It's like, no, they're definitely attacking the subconscious mind with emotional triggers and literally reeling you in almost to the extent of it being a drug with the marketing realm. You know, they get all this data from things like casinos and they study the chemical brain relationships from emotions and drugs, and then they put them all together in this package and go, oh my gosh, I could sell you something that's literally a piece of dog crap on the street. But if I put a nice little bow, some acoustical engineering music behind it, like I could sell that for whatever.
Yeah.
And then we have like Gucci stuff, you know, just all this crazy.
Well,
stuff.
I think I've tapped into something that's going to change that, right? Like, helping people is a form of energy. See, I can get down with that, right? And if people are willing to pay you for that and you're still doing what you love, then that's good. So I've you know, like kind of figured out and talked to Amanda about this too. She does the website, and I was thinking, well, we put a lot of work into this stuff, man. We could show people how to do this stuff because everybody talks to us that I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to do what you're doing. Well, why not help them? Why not make a business out of that and actually help people do that kind of stuff? And because we're going into this age of Aquarius now too, anyways, where everyone's going to want to do this stuff. Do you know how many people are in like coming out with new podcasts? If I told you the number,
it's every day.
If I told you the number, you wouldn't believe me, you know, but I think it's awesome. Everybody's ready to express themselves, you know?
Yeah. We're moving into a service-based currency.
Right.
Right. Because if you think about it, all of us collectively, we're each one piece of the puzzle, but I can't get my piece unless I extract it or I'm given it by somebody else that has the piece. So, you know, if someone's constantly giving, everybody's receiving.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, you know, we have to witness a couple things falling within the current system before we can get there. But that's the same way that not only nature revolves around, but the whole cosmos. It's give and take, you know, that the only thing constant is change, because change is a cycle of death and rebirth. And, you know, it's a constant source. And they say, you ever heard of the term service to others?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people talk about like, oh, we need 51% of service to others or whatever that thing is. And I think is that what the truest form of currency is definitely energy. And that's given to people by sharing through conversation your highest divine wisdom, right, that you've achieved. And it's only, you're only able to share that with someone when you're fully accepting yourself, who you are, to give them your truth.
Well, I can do that all day long. Now you can too. You can do that too. So
yeah, and but that's the goal, because if I'm not, you know, if I'm not trying to hide from behind my mask or anything like that, you may not see the benefits right away. But the more you share authentic, like be authentic with others,
sure,
the more you're authentic with yourself, and the more you'll receive. It has to do with all these laws. Once you start really looking into how all these universal laws, hermetic laws, how all these things kind of flow together through our expressions, through our emotional input, the only thing you really have to do is just be, and yeah, just be the best version of you.
Like, okay, I was talking about this today, about how a tree makes its own path, right? So we look like at a tree and it has all these branches and it looks like it's making its own path, you know, but really there's some geometry and some real mathematics in there. But when you step back and look at it from a bird's eye point of view, it just looks like this thing that's growing, that's making its own path towards light. And it kind of looks chaotic. Same thing. Brian talked to me about this last night with a volcano. When fires inside you, it erupts and you see the lava hit the ground, it makes its own path as it burns its way through. Right. I feel like at least the fire part of us is that, right? Now it can get out of control sometimes, but regardless, it gets us to where we're going, you know, like where we're supposed to go if we learn to follow it. But we have to balance that out too, because there are grounded things. And this is what I'm learning. I could burn my path, dude, by being authentic and just going wherever I want to go, saying what I want to say, feeling what I want to feel. But am I creating chaos in my wake? Am I grounding myself as I go through this place? You know, that's the biggest lesson I'm trying to learn now, you know.
And that comes with, I guess, I don't know if I'm barking down the wrong tree or something, but you can't tell other people their truth.
Right.
Right. So when we are that flame within us and that just wants to burn the path, there are certain, you know, things that we can tell people that we're not trying to tell them what to do, but the key is to try to tell them how to get there.
Yeah.
And because during my awakening, when I started being like, "Oh, my third eye's open. I know exactly what's right
for everyone." Know. Yeah, you're in that stage. You're Jesus,
everyone's
right?
In that stage, right? Yeah. Now that may be true to an extent, but here it is. That's your perspective that you're trying to force upon other people. It may be true within what you're viewing, but it's not true for them because they haven't found it yet. So, you know, when it comes to spiritually seeking, or when it comes to trying to retrieve these soul fragments, or trying to manifest money, or trying to do all that kind of stuff, what will come to you at the right moment when you're ready for it.
Yeah.
As long as you're there to do the work, you know, overcoming certain issues in your life, not trying to control things, but trying to flow through things. You know, the most important part of the day is the morning, because how you wake up, the thoughts that are in your mind in the morning are literally going to dictate your entire day to your evening.
Yeah, I don't want to wake up to like, I'm one of those people that wake up kind of slow, but and I don't like to just jump out of bed and take off running, right? I like to wake up slow. But I damn sure don't want to wake up to crankiness, right? Or dead silence, or someone that's in a bad mood. I like people to say good morning. You know what I mean? Like that's cool,
I try to do that with everyone,
right? But
I give the greeting of the day.
But you can't expect that. Like you have to be that person. If that's what you like.
Yeah, you have to
be the shining light. Yeah. Yeah, man. It's easy to say all this stuff too, right? Isn't it? It's easy to preach it, say it.
Sometimes I don't want to mess with customers at work. It's like, screw you. I'm not trying to, you know. But that's the thing is, we're still human. We still do have those moments where we're a little edgy. But then we got to realize that not only what's going on in your life, what's going on astrologically, what's going on in the collective. You know, there's so many different factors where if you're not really paying attention, are they actually your emotions? Or are you picking up the fields from something else?
Exactly, man. And see, this is what I see all the time, and I feel like it's in me and people I meet, wasted talent. And I hate it, because you could take someone that's just the most loving, passionate, beautiful person, right? But if they've been around too much of, what do you call it? Fractured stuff, and it's starting to fracture them. And then you see it's a sad story. Right. Because I believe everybody has some kind of amazing talent in them that they're allowing themselves to be crumbled upon by expectations or the way of the world or mundane things or toxic things or things that like the soul fractures that they refuse to see that they're fractured, you know. And when you see that, every single time when I see that, I'm like, then there's something in me that I'm refusing to see.
In a way, absolutely. But the more people like you, myself, and others keep doing this, part of the reason why we're in this version of this timeline is because this information has been suppressed. You know, if there wasn't people talking about it, someone's not going to synchronistically stumble upon this podcast. You know, these things can only be provided to people by us trying to share this message, trying to share this sort of information, because naturally humans are quite curious and we like to be joyful.
Yeah.
We're only stuck in the mundane fragments of life because we don't know anything else. But when you get a friend that talks about, like, a person came to work the other day and started talking about, yeah, this dude was talking about Wim Hof. Well, that's a doorway for me to start talking about things like that, to kind of pique their curiosity a little more. Maybe give them a little homework, but then knowing when to draw back when you've gone too far. Because once you go too far, they shut the door and they're like, okay, whatever, dude.
Because you want to share this knowledge. I can tell, like, you and I are kind of on the same level, man. I think when mm-hmm. it comes to that, like, we know we're not perfect. We know we're human. We can talk about the stuff. We'll still make the same mistakes we're talking about. But to be aware of it and know, hey, man, this is where I got to do that. There is an actual freedom to that, right? Because there's so many people absolutely. Walking around that, like, what's my purpose? I don't know why I'm here or whatever. And they, once you get to this point, you can be like, oh, well, all I got to do is do this work and be authentic, and that stuff will come to me. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a freedom.
For the longest time, I had no idea what I was going to do. No idea. And then I'm starting to see it more this year. If we stop doing the healing on ourselves, then yeah, you kind of stay stagnant a little while. Or if we dip, it's very easy to get sucked back to the matrix, especially if, like, you're making money and things seem all right. But then there's those little instances where you slip up and you got to, you know, stay aware of, you know, am I regressing or am I continuing forward? But again, we're still human, so we're still here to experience life. We're not supposed to be walking Jesus's, even though that is something attainable for whoever chooses to do that path. But I think, you know, the main thing that we need to really, really focus on is the more people become aware of what their core wounds are, is the more you'll be able to figure out who you actually are.
Yeah.
And that path or that purpose that everyone's searching for, you know, there is no purpose until you give it purpose.
Do you think, and we're running out because we have, that's a pretty profound statement, what you just said there, man, because you create your own purpose. Think of, yeah. Mm-hmm. People are like, I'm waiting for the universe to give me my purpose. Or you know what it is before you got here, and then you're the one creating it all the time. You're co-creating with the universe. So what the hell are you waiting on? Right.
That's a good question.
What I mean? Like, so yeah. What are you waiting on? Right. Deep down inside, you know what you got to do, you know? Mm-hmm. So, a lot of people say, and I heard you say this too, that we create or we manifest mirrors in our life, whether it's careers, relationships, street signs, whatever these mirrors, they're showing us what's going on. I also think when you're ready to heal, when you're going down this road, you also create opportunities to take a different path, right? So mm-hmm. I think a lot of people look at it in this perspective is, well, it's a mirror. If it's a relationship, it's a mirror, so it's something I have to overcome. But what if someone manifests something into your life where it's like, yeah, well, it's a mirror, but this is different. Are you willing to go this path or this path, right? Are you willing to stay where you're at or you want to go this path? Same thing when you got two careers. I can go back and make a whole bunch of money, or I can do what my soul wants me to do. And the sick trick the universe does is it doesn't show you the money over here where you want to do what you're supposed to do. It doesn't show it to you. But you have a pile of money back here doing the stuff you hate. It did the same thing to me, dude. Like, it's a weird, sick trick, right? And then you're like, well, yeah, what do I do?
Asking, well, check on learning is what I call it. Check yeah. on learning.
How's that? What does that mean?
Check on learning. So basically, once I got out of the intelligence realm, I kept trying to pursue that field, right? I kept trying to do it in the civilian sector. I tried my hardest. I even got interviewed by Apple doing... I was going to redesign their mapping system for their phones, for their mapping.
Yeah.
And it's almost as if the harder I tried, even though I was completely qualified, the farther away it pulled from me. And when there's those barriers or those, you know, obstacles that come our way, that's when I take that other path. or that's when I kind of sit there and try to ingest, well, what is it that I'm truly seeking? Is this for my highest good? Because the money's there, it's absolutely there. But sometimes the universe does throw you those curveballs and goes like, ah, well, here you go. You wanted this. Are you at your, but I guess what you could say is you take a self-reflection look and be like, well, am I at my highest position healing in myself, that if I take this path, is it going to help me get there, or is it going to derail me further down the road? Yeah. But that's just a question that we have to, you know, life is about taking risks. If you don't try something new and fail at it, how do you know you're even trying?
And the most successful people, I believe, the really successful people, the ones that actually get the big things in life have failed a lot, right?
Yes.
They're not afraid of it. At this point, it's like that Michael Jordan thing. Like, how many, you know, everybody talks about, oh, he scored 40 points and this and every, all this game, every game. How many games did he lose? How many shots has he missed?
Right? Mm-hmm. Yep.
Nobody talks about that. It's probably in the thousands, man, compared to the points that he made. And this is why I believe Israel Agardi, who wrote the book, The Tree of Life, and all the stuff, and he talks about Rosicrucianism and the Golden Dawn, but he says that persistence is omnipotent. Right. He said, because like there's education doesn't make you successful. Right. He said, there's a lot of educated derelicts out there, you know, and he said, talent doesn't make you successful. He said, the world's full of, wasted talent. Right. He said, but persistence is omnipotent. People that go for what they want and they don't give up regardless of failure. He believes that's divine, you know.
Absolutely. I would agree with that, because, you know, along the way, each time you fail, you're learning something different that you wouldn't have before.
Yep. It's getting you where you want to go.
Gaining more knowledge, I would say, versus educating yourself. I think knowledge is very, very important, because knowledge then turns to wisdom. And once you have wisdom, you just keep going.
Yeah, for sure.
Or you know what not to take.
Well.
But that's the non-ending journey, I guess.
Is there... So I'm sure there's something, because we got to wrap up, that we didn't talk about, right? So you're going to come back and talk to us about it, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's a lot. I think we got derailed a little bit, but it went to a different route. I think next time I can start talking about how to retrieve those aspects.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kind of keys on what to look for. Because that's a big thing. When you do a simple Google search on soul fragments, you'll get a bunch of video games. Video games have a way of taking these spiritual concepts and replacing the information with something that's fictitious. They do a great job with that.
Yeah.
Well, because they don't want the collective to heal. They don't want them to heal at all.
No. And anytime you start going, I think anytime you start going in the direction that you're supposed to go, there's a whirlwind of hell that's going to come your way trying to stop you. You know, most of the time it'll be family, friends. It's weird, the stuff that tries to stop you. I even had a conversation, I know we're over time, but with my own father, who apologized to me, like, that he tried to stop me. But now he's like inspired by me, and he's like, don't quit. And I'm like, what? You know? You were telling me just like how much of a fool I was so not too long ago.
Yeah.
And now you're telling me not to quit, right? So I think, yeah, we just got to get past the validation and just validate what's in ourselves, man, you know, individually. Anyways, yeah, can you tell everybody how they can find you? I know your YouTube is under construction and all that, right? Is that what's going on right now?
Yeah, I like to stay under the radar. I like to call myself the wizard in the background, but I need to start making a presence. I'll be featured on 9 Degree Turns upcoming here in the future for everyone that's on Instagram and Facebook and then YouTube. But I don't know if I'm going to create my own thing just because that's not necessarily my calling. I just like to... I am going to create some courseworks on some actual healing modalities. I don't think I'm going to charge for them, though. I think they're just going to be free. And the reason why is because I feel like if I can give something that helped me so much, I think that's the best thing I can do.
Or make it value for value, man. Just be like, if you find value for this and you can...
Yeah, donation-based.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, we definitely got your back on that, and I appreciate you coming on, and we got to have you back, man. So I don't want to derail you, but that's what I do when I get involved with conversations is I start derailing things, right?
Yeah.
But that's why you got to come back and talk to us, brother. For sure. All right. Well, we're going to roll out of here, guys. The Secret Teachings with Ryan Gable is coming up next. Charlie Robinson's going to be on here for Macroaggressions Podcast tomorrow night. Looking forward to that one, too. You guys have a good night. See you again tomorrow night. Sweet dreams.